It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show. And here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Good evening. Later in the show, the Puritan backlash. What is it and where can you buy one?
And we'll be talking to the men who went to the Antarctic to retrace the footsteps of Scott and found Captain Oates wandering around with an A to Z. So, anyway, Andy, it's our book review first, isn't it? Now, what have you been reviewing for us this week?
Well, this book here, Nick, very good. Social Etiquette by B.M. Davis.
Oh,
very useful. Tells you the forms you should observe at, you know, sensitive social functions.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, here's a good tip here.
Uh-huh.
When in the congregation at a funeral, do not initiate a Mexican wave.
Although, I never knew that. I'll make a note of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's worth noting down because it's easily done. You know?
Yeah.
And it goes on, although if a bereaved relative begins one, it is considered bad form not to join in. So.
I see, right.
Now, I've also been reading this one here, Aerosols Are Fun, produced by the aerosol industry, stressing the positive aspects of aerosols. For instance, it argues that when aerosols finally destroy the ozone layer, then Britain will get really hot, dry summers.
Oh, well, that's great, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and hot, dry winters as well. Yeah. Now it's time for Forum. Tonight on Forum, we look at language. And with me is Dr. Jean Tipton, who's just written a book about language and its roots. Now, Jean, what is language?
Well, language is, in a very real sense, a living thing.
What, like a badger or a fox?
No, not quite like a badger or a fox.
So it's not actually a living thing in a very real sense at all, is it?
Well, I mean, if you want to be pedantic about it...
Am I being pedantic? I don't know. Pernickety, possibly. I don't know, I'm not sure. Anyway, Jean, you were saying?
Well, I was just making the point that language changes and evolves according to usage.
So it's in perpetual mutation and development.
Exactly.
Well, perhaps I could put that very interesting point to our second guest, who's here to discuss the complex evolution of language, and that is Emlyn Hughes. Now, Emlyn...
Yes, Andy?
Language...
are sending off offence as far as I'm concerned. If they swear at the ref, then they're well out of order.
No. I meant the concept of a language. For instance, do you feel, Emlyn, that, say, an idea can exist in an abstract form, or does that idea only exist when it's been expressed concretely in the form of language?
Oh, don't tell me this one. I know it. It's a what happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, while Emlyn screws up his face and slaps the desk with his hand, then maybe I can turn to our last guest, Professor James Simpson. Now, Professor, you argue that with the influence of tabloid culture, etc., that our language is actually shrinking.
Yes, on current trends, I calculate that by 1999, the English language will consist of comparatively few words.
How many exactly?
Four.
Just four words.
Yes, four words. Dirty, den, princess, and die.
Yes, it's going to be quite hard to hold a conversation, isn't it?
Yes, unless it's about dirty den or princess die.
Right,
or
yeah.
A dirty princess who's just died in a den.
Yes, thank you.
Princess den who's...
Yes, thank you, Professor. Now, Jean... do you go along with the professor on this?
Oh, not at all. It's my view that language is expanding all the time. I mean, this summer alone in America, the Urangate hearings have given birth to 98 new verbs. I mean, all of them meaning to lie.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I think language is growing.
No, I'm sorry. There's clear evidence that it...
I've got it!
What?
The answer to the question you put me.
Ah, what, do ideas exist as abstract or linguistic entities?
Yeah.
And the answer?
Len Badger of Sheffield United, definitely.
Well, thank you, Emlyn, for your usual intelligent contribution.
Oh, my pleasure, Andy. I'm well chuffed, frankly.
Yeah, that's all from Forum.
So what are we discussing next week?
Morality.
Ah, oh, best goalie Juventus ever had.
Shut up.
Tell me, Andy, are you any good with machinery?
Why, what's the problem?
Well, it's just that at home our iron's not working.
Oh, what, Muriel's away, you mean?
Yeah. Anyway, she's away. But I thought I'd do some ironing, see. So I plug the iron in, right? I put it on a pair of my jeans, I set the dial to cotton. And The motor's not working because the... stayed where it was, you know. Stayed still in the same place and burnt a huge hole in my best pair of 501s.
Actually, Nick, irons don't move by themselves. You have to pass it over the clothes by hand. You see, that's what the handle on the top's for.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, 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 this is one of those that you plug in.
No,
right?
It's the same.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Straight up?
Yeah.
So I shouldn't have written all those letters then?
Well, who did you write to?
Well, the manager of the shop, obviously, the chairman of the company, the Office of Fair Trading, Roger Cook, That's Life, DPP, Mikhail Gorbachev...
Gorbachev?
Yeah, well, I get carried away when I'm angry, you know. Anyhow, so I'm really thirsty after I'd done the complaints letters, so I fancied a cup of tea. So I'm filling the bath there.
Bath?
Yeah, well, there weren't any clean cups.
Yeah, but why the bath?
Well, you know how washing up accumulates when you're on your own.
How long had Muriel been away?
4 hours. So I sorted that out. And in the afternoon, I went down the laundrette.
I thought you had a washing machine now.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, I prefer going to the laundrette for the human contact, you know? And also, it's really difficult to work out where the powder goes. You know, it's complicated. It's a noosey thing. So I go down the laundrette, and there's a woman there who runs it. And I'm asking her for some change, right?
Right. See you next Thursday, Maureen. Don't forget your club money. Bye-bye now, my love. Bye.
Excuse me. Actually,
Hello? Yes, we do service washes, but you have to put the clothes in the machine yourself. Yes, love?
Yeah, I'd like to...
Oh, take that poodle out of the dryer!
excuse me, have you got any change?
Change?
Yeah, please.
Oh, do you mind going to the shop next door for change,
oh,
love?
What? You haven't got any?
No, it's just that it really winds them up. Here.
Yeah? What?
See that chap in the corner?
Yeah. Why has he got a cardboard box on his head?
Well, he went on blind date.
That Cilla Black show,
that's
you mean?
Right.
Yeah?
Doesn't want anyone to recognise him.
Oh, I see.
Woman next to him.
What, the one in the lotus position?
Hanging by her feet from the peanut dispenser.
Yeah.
She's a bit odd as well.
Oh.
Take a look in her machine. There's nothing in it. She's washing her aura.
Her aura?
I says, the first time she comes in, I says, what are you doing, love? You forgot your clothes? She says, I'm washing my aura, my spiritual shroud.
Blimey.
I have to help her fold it when she comes out the dryer. Well, I must be going. I've got to take these old socks down the amputee's ward. Bye-bye, now, my love.
And I tell you, Andy, she just walked off and left me, you know. My clothes were ruined. I take them out of the machine, right? And they're all totally wringing wet.
Well, why didn't you put them in the dryer?
Dryer?
Yeah, the big ones that spin round.
Oh, no. You see, I tried one of them first because they're cheaper, right? It's just 20 pence. But that was faulty. Didn't fill with water or anything. The clothes just came out, like, hotter and smellier, you know? Yeah. Anyhow, I think I'll wait till Muriel comes back now, frankly.
When is she coming back?
Well, the note she left was a bit vague. Yeah, look.
Mm. I wouldn't say the word never was vague.
Yeah, but she doesn't mean it, you know. She's just trying to worry me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know what women are like. One girlfriend I had, do you know what she did?
What?
She left me, got married, had 4 kids, just to make me jealous. Pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Abandon your sanity and come with us on a journey into the labyrinth of the unknown as we present another in our Tales of the Impossible. This week, episode 2 of Invaders from the Planet Dull.
The story so far. Earth has been invaded by an alien race of incredibly dull beings. They have conquered our planet by insidiously boring the human race into submission, cunningly disguised as computer buffs, synchronized swimmers and sales managers called Nigel. They have now seized the world's communications network, and on TV screens across the world, a terrifyingly boring face appears.
Greetings, Earthlings. We are from the planet Dull in the galaxy of Alpha Centauri. A galaxy billions of light years away, Although probably the best way to get there is not to take the main route via Saturn, but to cut through the back way by Betelgeuse. I find that actually works out shorter in the long run. But I digress. Long ago, we left our planet searching for a new planet with enough tedium to let us thrive and grow strong. Then across the universe, our sensors picked up something called Debbie Greenwood. And we knew our search was over.
Meanwhile, in Professor Quark's laboratory, the Professor, Mike Dexter, and his brainy but still pretty and feminine girlfriend, Sue, watch in horror.
There must be a way of stopping them.
Their darkness seems quite invincible.
Well, why don't we just hit them with all the firepower we can?
We've tried that, but the bullets just bounce off their cardigans.
These creatures must have a weakness.
Sue's right, but what?
Well, to find out, we must capture one of them.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Here come one of the creatures now.
But the interesting thing about the new Peugeot is that the fuel ratio compares really quite favourably with both the Audi and the...
Grab him! Careful, he's armed! See, his pockets are stuffed full of holiday photos!
Quick, let's get him back to the laboratory!
The Professor's been in with the alien for hours now.
Let's hope he's found something. Well, Professor?
The creature seems impervious to everything. He just sits there, getting stronger. He started talking about how Princess Di has lost a lot of weight recently. I only just got out in time.
Close shave.
Now let's think. The alien needs dullness to survive, so...
Perhaps if it were to be subjected to something exciting.
That's a brilliant idea. How about something like sex?
No, we need something exciting.
I know. Of course. That's it.
5 days later, on the summit of Mount Everest.
Okay, Sue, I've strapped the alien to these skis. If we give him a push, then... Well, if skiing down Everest isn't exciting enough to kill him, then nothing is. You can take that gag out of his mouth now.
Right.
Although the British Gas shares I bought haven't done as well as I would.
There he goes. Let's hope this works.
Minutes later, at the foot of Mount Everest, the Professor finds the creature in the snow.
The creature shows no outward signs of life. Thank God! We've found a way of destroying them! The Earth is saved! Oh, I am so happy! I think I'll go down the garden center! Oh my God! The creature is taking me over! I must resist! Resist! Only I was thinking of putting in a rockery! Oh my God! Oh, an ornamental pond! Bones fishing beside it! Oh my God! I must find it! Help me!
Next week, Mike is captured and taken to the alien's leader in the quiet bit of Sidcup that's very convenient for the station. In episode 3 of Invaders from the Planet Dull.
Tonight, we're delighted to have as our special guest on the show one of the great music hall double acts of the 30s and 40s, Hector and Horace, the High Priests of Hilarity. Great to have you on the show, chaps.
Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you, Andy.
Lovely to be here.
Well, boys, you must have seen a lot of changes over the years.
Oh, yes, it's surprising what you can see through a keyhole.
yeah.
Oh, but you see, the point is, you see, in the old days of music hall, you could work for the whole year in the same town and never play the same theatre twice.
That's right. Many's the time we played a theatre and they'd say, you could stay in this town for a year, but you'll never play this theatre again.
That's right.
Now, you must have worked with all the greats in your time.
Oh, yes, sir. Max Miller.
Oh, yeah. Oh, do you remember old Max's little trick for getting a drink out of you?
Oh, yes, he used to stand there under, you see, with his glass, just holding the empty glass there, and he'd say,
I've bought the first ones. It's about time you mean sods put your hands in your pockets and got around it, or I'll bloody well turn you upside down and shake all money out of your pockets.
That were it, but he never meant it maliciously.
All right.
Oh, remember the first time we worked with him? He were topping the bill. Huh? There were Glenda the Swedish contortionist.
Yes. Barmy Bill the bricklayer. Do you remember him?
Oh, aye.
He fills the stage with bricks. Very hard act to follow. You can never get on the stage, you see. You never get on.
Fabulous act. And then there was Sammy the singing cowherd and his tap-dancing Frisians.
Tap-dancing Frisians?
Ah, you don't get acts like that anymore.
Oh, the love and dedication he put into teaching them cows to tap-dance.
Right, years he spent.
And they never got the hang of it?
No. Shame what happened, mind.
Well, what did happen?
Well, one night at Weston-super-Mare, there was a thunderstorm and the whole herd stampeded, charged off the stage and trampled four members of audience to death.
And do you know, he never won that audience back that night. Even if this is done. If you kill a member of the audience, no matter how well you're doing, they'll never forgive you.
Oh, true. Even at Glasgow Empire.
Oh, what a terrible hard place that was.
Cheer, oh dear.
The Glasgow Empire.
Oh dear, the Glasgow Empire.
Dear, oh dear.
Dear, oh dear.
We never actually played the Glasgow Empire, did we?
No.
Well, thank you, Hector and Horace. That's
oh, they were wicked there, though. Do you remember Len Lenehan playing the Glasgow Empire?
No, do I remember him?
Oh, dear. He were going down so badly, the audience, they chopped him up and made him into this enormous meat pie.
And sent him back to his wife.
Yeah, well, thank you, Hector and Horace. Now,
but the funny bit was, his wife was a vegetarian.
Well, thank you, Hector and Horace, for those very amusing anecdotes. Just goes to show, old performers never die, unfortunately. And we move on to our phone-in spot, where listeners call in and express their views on the burning issues of the day. And the number is 3858555. Very low budget, I'm afraid. And we await your call, and we have our first caller on the line, and it is George from Hendon. Hello, George.
Hello.
You're on, George. Fire away.
Well, I just rang up to say that I think it's a disgrace. It shouldn't be allowed. I mean, it's absolutely criminal. Like I say, it's a disgrace.
What is, George?
Sorry?
Well, what is it that's a disgrace?
Well, whatever it is you're talking about.
Well, we're not talking about anything yet, George. You're our first caller.
Oh. I've never been the first caller before. I always thought ring up 445 and then just say it's a disgrace and blame it on Bernie Grant, you know.
Yeah, well. Look, George, perhaps you'd like to ring back once we've got a discussion going on a particular topic.
Right. Sorry.
That's okay, Josh. Okay. And next we have Jean. Hello, Jean.
Hello. I just rang to say how much I agree with the last caller. To draw a comparison with Adolf Hitler and generally get very, very cross about something.
Well, cross about what exactly?
Well, whatever it was the last caller was getting cross about. I always use that as a topic. It saves me thinking one up for myself. Then I get really wound up and accuse the presenter of interrupting me.
Interrupting you?
Will you let me finish? And I get so angry, I just get lost for words. Then I say I'm lost for words for about 10 minutes before repeating how much I agree with that last caller.
Yeah, the last caller didn't talk about anything.
And how right he was.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jean. Can we have the next caller, please?
Hello, it's George. Can I say it's a disgrace now?
We haven't got a topic yet, George.
What does that matter? You're just splitting hairs.
All right. All right, George. Look, George, I'll suggest a topic, okay? Tell you what are your views on the Middle East?
The Middle East?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a complicated situation.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But in my view, it shouldn't be allowed.
What?
I mean, it's a disgrace. I blame that Bernie fucking grand,
George. George.
Oh, it's a bloody disgrace. I mean, I don't pay my rates just so that there can be a war in the Middle East. I'll tell you what, this war in the Middle East business, I'll tell you what the answer is. I'll tell you what they ought to do with those geezers. They ought to put them in the army.
George.
Oh, it's a bloody disgrace.
George.
Diabolical, the whole thing.
It's Hitler all over again.
Absolutely. Yep, Hitler all over again.
It's Hitler and Mussolini all over again.
Gene, will you get off the line?
Hitler, Mussolini and Rasputin all over again.
It's Hitler, Mussolini, Rasputin and Vlad the Impaler all over again.
Gene.
Some of us are old enough to remember Vlad the Impaler, young man.
Gene, get off the line.
She's entitled to use this phone if she wants.
Oh, I see. What, she's sharing a phone with you, is she, George?
Well, she has to. It's the only one on the ward.
Well, we've had to abandon our phone in due to technical problems there. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Andy. He's right, though, isn't he? What? It's a disgrace.
Oh, what?
Well, I mean, it shouldn't be allowed, should it?
Yes, I'd just like to say I agree with Nick there.
Oh, bloody hell. Bloody hell. Cue something else, for God's sake.
And now, the BBC presents, as part of an educational series that we can sell abroad and thus pay for some bigger yachts on Howard's Way, The Glory That Is the Animal Kingdom.
The Animal Kingdom, a wonderful and diverse chain of living creatures which enrich our planet and often taste good. A chain of living things which begins with that most basic of creatures, the amoeba. A single-cell animal which reproduces by dividing itself in two. This is an amplified recording of an amoeba reproducing.
Oh! 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 Oh!
Thus, one amoeba transforms itself into two amoeba, each with a tiny little hernia. Single cells are the building blocks which go to construct all creatures, from the most basic parasitic invertebrates like mollusks, worms, tabloid journalists, to the more advanced life forms like fish. Fish are creatures of surprising complexity. Take the humble salmon. Every year they swim heroically upstream, leaping up waterfalls to reach the spawning grounds. Here is a recording of that process.
I give up. I mean, this waterfall's too high.
Nonsense, woman. You've got to persevere. We've only been at it 24 days. Oh, nearly.
Why are we doing this?
Instinct. Instinct tells us to swim hundreds of miles up raging rivers, struggling endlessly against the current, till we reach the place where we were born, where we meet, collapse with exhaustion and die. It's a great life. It's a tradition we've observed since the dawn of time.
Well, why don't we just mate here? It'd save us an awful lot of effort.
Are you some sort of communist or something? Mate somewhere else other than your native loch? Call yourself a salmon, you brazen-painted little Jezebel!
Just an idea.
A very dangerous, subversive idea. Now then, to jump this waterfall, I think I'm going to need a burst of sudden adrenaline. Now you creep up behind me, and when I'm not looking, shout the word patty.
Instinct drives all animals. It's what compels insects to create complex social structures. For instance, ant society is headed by the dominant queen ant. Then comes the soldier ant, which defends the nest, the worker ant, which builds and replenishes the nest, and the middleman ant, which takes 10% off the top of the nest. Ants are amazingly strong. They can carry 12 times their own body weight, although nowadays ants only carry 6 times their own weight for fear of redundancies. Above insects in the chain of life are the reptiles. At some stage in the miraculous chronology of evolution, a lizard sprouted wings and started to fly. We don't know which lizard first did this, but it must have got one hell of a shock. It had invented the bird. Hans Overath is the world's leading authority on birds.
Birds vary enormously in size, plumage, and most of all, intelligence.
from the highly resourceful magpie to the incredibly stupid grouse, a bird so stupid and predictable that even members of the royal family can shoot it.
But at the top of the vibrant pyramid of the animal kingdom come the mammals. Now, the secret of the mammal's success is its adaptability. For instance, the giraffe grew a very long neck so that it could reach the most succulent leaves. The camel grew its hump so that it could store valuable fat. And the baboon grew long, sharp claws for ripping the windscreen wipers off cars in safari parks. And it is the apes which perhaps fascinate us most, as borne out by David Attenborough's unforgettable TV encounter with a family of gorillas.
I'm whispering now, of course, so as not to startle the male. He's an immensely powerful, magnificent animal, and yet incredibly gentle. He's touching me lightly on the arm, curious about me. He's intrigued by the smooth fabric of my safari jacket, enjoying the tactile experience, and now he's undoing the button on my pocket. Amazing that such a giant of an animal can be so dexterous. And now he reaches into my pocket and he's taking out my wallet. He's now opening up the wallet and he's taking out the banknotes. Of course, he can have no idea what money is. And now, yes, he's counting the notes. And now he's just put them into his wallet, which he's just produced from a hole in the tree.
We can understand Attenborough's elation, but imagine too the excitement of the 19th century African explorers who each day would discover some fascinating new species.
What's that you've caught, Harris? Looks like a Thompson's gazelle.
Yes, yes, it is.
Why are you painting a blue stripe across its back?
Simple. I'm going to paint the blue stripe across its back, wait for the paint to dry, then I'm going to shoot it, stuff it, and claim it's a new species. Harris's gazelle. That'll shut up that cocky bugger Thompson. Yeah. What have you got there, Dempsey?
This? Oh, this is Dempsey's zebra.
Dempsey's zebra. Got a nice ring to it.
Yes. It's basically the same as an ordinary zebra, except that I've sawn one of its legs off.
Sadly, there can be no doubt that man remains the biggest threat to the animal kingdom, and will remain so for as long as animals continue to walk around in colourful, commercially viable fabrics. But for now, at least, man can marvel at the kestrel as it hovers. Marvel at the grace and power of the horse as it comes in seventh with your savings on its back. And finally, stand open-mouthed in wonder as that most ingenious of hunters, the puma, takes a can opener to an armadillo. All these and many more go to make up the glory that is the animal kingdom.
Well, that's all for this week.
Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Harry Enfield. The show was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.